had it been going to Jen or his people at MSS. That's not enough. Coburn rubbed his forehead. Unless those emails were being copied to Kendrick or someone in his office, they won't do us any good. That may not necessarily be true, Will continued. We already have an indirect money trail from Jen to Ballard, and we have Jen on the audio talking to Kendrick. We have a direct connection between Kendrick and the MSS. We don't know that yet, and in the event we did, it would be indirect, not direct. Coburn seemed to be searching for a solution. Aaron, can you find out where that duplicate information was sent? Where's that server? Aaron shook his head and went back to his screen. It'll take me some time. Lacey turned her attention to Will. Agent Colburn's right. We need written proof of communication between the two, and that Kendrick agreed to push the false story that this was Islamic terrorists. We're looking for a needle in a haystack here, Lacey. Wait a minute. Hold up. Aaron stopped. Why would Sajwani set up a cloning program to run on Liwa's servers when all he had to do was copy the files or correspondence to a flash drive? Lacey asked. Wouldn't that be less risky? No, because when a file is copied, if the system has enabled logging and auditing, it's very easy to then look at the event log and call up what files were copied, Aaron replied. But what I'm saying is that it looks like he installed a cloning program that automatically duplicated and forwarded information to a different server. And it appears to have been good enough to avoid detection. Aaron paused for a moment while he studied the information on the screen. The server it was being sent to was private by the looks of it. He continued to work. Oh my God, there's no encryption? He cast a surprised glance to Lacey. I can slide right in. They waited for Aaron to gain access to this private server. I've got it. I'm inside. Now let me see what you've got, little girl. He seemed to be talking to himself now. Where did you find this guy? Coburn asked Will. He's my friend, Lacey smiled, and he's the best in the business. Lines of code began running down the screen. Oh. Aaron leaned back. What have we got here? He continued typing, and no one but him seemed to know what it was he was actually doing. Oh, shit. This is Jen's private server in Beijing. I don't have a specific address, though. How do you know? Lacey asked. I can see the emails. I can see activity from several different locations. File transfers. Everything is on here. Now I just need an IP address. It might not be encrypted, but it's routing through a shitload of relays. That doesn't matter right now, Will began. Can you copy anything and everything on there before they realize you're inside? There has to be something on there tying him to Kendrick. Yeah, I can do that. I need storage first. Where can I send the files? Here. I've already got a secure cloud server online, Coburn replied. There better be something on there, or we're screwed. Chapter 25. Asan Sajwani had diverted mounds of information from Liwa properties to Lei Jian's server over the past 6 months, completely undetected, and hours had already been sifting through that information in search of evidence. But so far, no one had spotted the smoking gun. The support needed to bring forth charges of treason against the Undersecretary of the State Department's Office of Political Affairs. Can I get anyone coffee? Lacey pushed away from the table. I'm making a pot. I can't keep my eyes open much longer without some caffeine. Jesus, it's 1 o'clock in the morning? Aaron rubbed his eyes. I'll take a cup. That'd be great. Thanks, Lacey. Will leaned back for a quick stretch. I thought we would have found something by now. Same here. Axel replied. It's a lot of information. We'll get there. We have to, Colburn added. I'll take a cup of Joe, too. Thank you. Minutes later, Lacey returned, placing the pot on the table along with a few mugs. Okay, then. Where are we? Under cover of night, a sleek, agile man draped head to toe in dark clothing slipped inside the quiet home by way of overriding a substandard and flawed security system. The pale yellow moon shined through the windows and offered temperate light that illuminated his path toward the elaborate winding staircase. Someone whose powers extended into the upper echelons had taken notice and was left with no choice but to right the wrong committed by the man whose home was absurdly opulent. A home that repulsed the man now cautiously ascending the stairs as further proof of the American's avarice. Less than 2 hours ago, activity was spotted by an IT worker at the Liwa offices who was running maintenance on their new upgrade. Activity that raised concern. But it wasn't until the discovery of the information he'd accessed that Ahmed was forced to alert his supervisor, who in turn made the appropriate call to the consultant whose files were being compromised. Satwani notified Jin, who shut down his server within minutes of the discovery that Tom Neville, head of cybersecurity at Nova Investments, had broken into his own system. And on further inspection, noticed everything the intruder had copied. Jin was left with no choice but to put this to a halt. Neville, a man he'd only known through Ballard as one who could supply what Jin needed, might now be his downfall and the others who were in collusion with him. And if that happened, the minister would take his anger out on the former ambassador. Upon reaching the top of the steps, he peered left, then right, deciding which way would lead him to the target. A long corridor appeared on the left, and that was where he decided to begin. In a house like this, the entrance to Neville's bedroom would undoubtedly be grand, and that was what he would look for. If any children resided in the house, harm would be unwarranted, but if his plan was obstructed in any way, he would take out whomever crossed his path. The hall was darker than the rest of the upstairs, having no windows to allow the light in. He would have to step lightly until his eyes adjusted to the near pitch black between the walls. In the distance, the end of the corridor appeared in the form of tall black double doors. He had a 50-50 chance, and it seemed he'd chosen correctly. This was the room. He reached for the lever and turned with careful consideration. There was no squeak. There was no sound at all. The door glided open with a smooth silence, and he was inside. The bed lay roughly 20 paces ahead of him and was flanked by two tall but narrow windows on either side. However, there was a little light, as the windows were covered by darkening blinds. The willowy man who lurked in the darkness couldn't identify whether someone occupied the bed, but he'd come this far and had no choice except to continue. With a restrained approach, he reached behind his back to retrieve the weapon. Just feet from the bed, he saw that there was only one person, and he believed this person was a target. The shadowy figure hovered over Tom Neville, examining the man whose throat he was about to slit. But the man's eyes flickered and soon clicked open. A harsh shrill climbed from Neville's gullet, his arms raised instinctively for protection.
No, wait, stop!
Who are you working with, Mr. Neville? He pressed the knife against the soft, loose flesh of Tom's neck. You've been helping them, haven't you?
I don't know what you're talking about. Please, I can pay you.
You sound very frightened, but there's no need to be. Just tell me the truth. Who are they?
Please, don't kill me.
Then speak.
Lacey Merrick and an FBI agent named Will Kaysen. That's all I know, I swear. I had to help them. They were blackmailing me.
That is where you went wrong, Mr. Neville. Lei Jin is far more dangerous than any FBI agent or woman. He pressed harder and the flesh began to tear. Where are they?
Neville winced as warm blood seeped down to his chest. I don't know. They came to my office, then left. I don't know where they went.
You chose the wrong side.
He slid the knife along Neville's throat and split it open.
Tom's eyes bulged as he gurgled and struggled for breath. Blood erupted from his veins and flowed down to his bedsheets, soaking them until they turned black.
Shh.
He caressed Tom's hair as he waited for him to take his final breath.
A quick picture of his handiwork as proof the deed was done, and he began to type a text message that read,
Lacey Merrick, FBI agent Will Kaysen, responsible.
Why don't you two get some rest? Colburn began. The three of us can keep looking. It's almost 4 in the morning. Go catch a few Z's.
Lacey narrowed her gaze as she continued to peer at the laptop screen. She turned to Colburn with concern.
What is it?
Take a look at this. Her index finger pressed against the screen. Does that mean anything to you guys?
It's a screenshot of text messages, but this email looks to be a draft only,
Will said.
It was like he was keeping it in case he needed to send it later.
Lacey, can you zoom in on the screenshot?
Sure.
She pressed the mouse on the plus sign at the bottom of her screen.
Transfer complete. Please verify funds. Will began. The reply says funds posted. There's no name at the top of the screen. We don't know who exchanged these messages, Axel said. If it's Kendrick, I can bet a dollar to a dime he didn't use his government-issued cell phone.
Colburn looked at Will. You think we can get an ID on the number that's shown?
Wouldn't be hard, unless it's pay and go.
I'm sure it is, Colburn replied. But we have a number and we can track that number, burner phone or not. All newer phones have GPS when they're turned on.
I'll run the number. You have to register a lot of pay-and-go phones now, too, so there's a chance it's registered, Will replied. And if it's not, then it's possible to trace it.
He looked at the screenshot again. These messages were exchanged only 2 days after the attack. Let's hope they're from Kendrick.
We can't get ahead of ourselves here.
Kaysen, can you run this through NGI?
Axel asked.
The only thing I can do if it's a burner is check for registration. I don't have access to phone databases, but NSA does.
Colburn smiled.
Then I might know someone who can help.
Will approached Lacey as she slept on the couch. He placed his hand on her shoulder while she lay curled up on one end.
Lacey, we got it.
She began to rouse and noticed the gray morning light trickle into the room.
What? You got...
It only took a moment for her to realize what he was saying.
Oh, my God.
She immediately sat upright.
Is it him?
Come take a look.
Will waved her over as he walked back toward the table. Lacey's head began to clear. She noticed everyone else now hovered over the kitchen table. She wished she hadn't fallen asleep and now felt the weaker for it.
The number belongs to Kendrick.
Yes, it does.
Colburn pointed to an email he'd received from his NSA contact, encrypted, of course.
What now? We have what we need, right? We can end this before anyone else gets hurt.
I think this is enough to take to the director.
Will turned to Axel.
What about your people? This is an FBI investigation right now, so let's just present this to the director. But I won't dismiss our involvement sooner rather than later. We're dealing with the MSS.
Then let's get this to him. Will checked the time.
We could be at his office inside of an hour. The sooner the better as far as I'm concerned.
It was finally going to be over, and the idea sent relief through Lacey. She could get her kids and go back home.
Give me 5 minutes.
She had no fresh clothes, no toiletries, and the only thing she could do was splash water on her face, pull her hair back with a band she'd found in her purse, and dampen a washcloth to wipe her body down. As she reemerged, she reached for the cell phone Will had given her.
Can I call my kids first? They have to know that I'm all right and that I'll be home soon.
Colburn eyed Kaysen before returning his attention to Lacey.
Just be quick. We all need to leave.
Lacey nodded and stepped into the only bedroom in the little townhouse and made the call.
Celeste? It's me. How are you guys?
She waited for a response.
Celeste, can you hear me?
Lacey checked the bars to see if she had a decent signal. When she returned the phone to her ear, someone else was on the line.
Lacey Marek.
The voice was laden with a heavy accent she believed to be Asian.
Who is this? We've had a lot of trouble tracking you down, but your friend Tom Neville was a great help to us.
She walked back into the living room, her expression stunned. Will approached her.
What's wrong?
Don't you want to answer him?
The man on the line replied.
Tell him we have your children and your nanny.
She covered her mouth to silence a scream that was threatening to claw from her throat. Will snatched the phone from her hands.
Who is this?
I could say I'd like to know the same thing, but I have a feeling you must be FBI agent Will Kaysen.
He paused for a reaction, but Will remained silent.
I'm having a good time with the children, but I'm afraid I can't stay forever. I have a boss, just like you, agent, and there is a small matter of material you have in your possession.
Will shook his head toward Axel.
What do you want?
I want the documents you stole, of course. I thought my objective was clear. And in exchange, Mrs. Marek's family will remain unharmed.
I don't have what you think I have.
Do you really think this is a time for games, Agent Kaysen? I had a conversation with Tom Neville in the early hours of the morning, and he told me how you used his credentials to get into Liwa property servers. And it seems as though you employed someone who is capable of using those credentials to gain access to a server that did not belong to you.
You mean the one on which Jen keeps his most valuable information?
I knew I wasn't wrong about you. Unfortunately, you have been able to evade some of our people. But now, I have the upper hand. And there will be no more running, Agent Kaysen. We will meet at the place where you'll have left the children in 1 hour. The line went dead. Oh, God. They found them. They found my children. How? Lacey's knees collapsed beneath her, and Aaron reached to offer a steady hand.
It's okay, Lace. We'll get them back. They'll be okay.
He tightened the grip around her waist. How the hell do they find them? Aaron's demeanor turned harsh and brimmed with anger.
Mendez, Will began. He knew. I told him. But I didn't know he was being monitored.
What did he want? Lacey whispered.
The information on Jen's server. He said he talked to Neville, and I can only assume that means Neville's dead, Will replied.
We have to give him what he wants. Tinged with desperation, her voice grew weaker by the second.
He has to know that we copied it from a server, Aaron began. What's to stop us from making another copy and using it after the exchange? They'll come back, and there will be no negotiating with them.
Colburn turned his attention to Lacey.
I'm so sorry. I don't know how they overpowered our men.
He cast his gaze toward Axel.
We'll get them back. Then we have to go now. He gave us 1 hour. It'll take us almost that long just to get there.
We'll stop dead.
Wait. There could be another way.
They pulled into the parking lot of a convenience store on their way to meet with Jen's people to make the exchange.
I see him.
Will glanced through the passenger window and spotted SSA Mendez in the distance.
You sure he's not compromised? Colburn asked. After what happened when you were on the line with him.
He's not. I know I can trust him. They sent him back to Louisville, but after the accident, he pleaded his case to the ASAC. He flew in last night, and he's been trying to track me down.
Will stepped out of the car and met Mendez halfway with his hand extended.
I'm glad to see you're all right. Mendez returned the greeting with enthusiasm. I didn't know what the hell happened after the call dropped.
Thank you for believing me, sir.
No one knows I'm here. I was going to see Agent Axel first thing this morning when I got your call. Didn't know he was with you. ASAC Rousseau knows something's up, but he's given me freedom to explore the situation. So what is the situation, exactly?
Will went on to explain how they'd made it this far, and who he thought was on the inside, including, possibly, the man who'd taken his place on the investigation.
He could have been handpicked by Kendrick. I don't know. But according to Lacey, he didn't seem to be friendly. How's she holding up?
Mendez glanced back at the car where she waited with the others.
I can't imagine what must be going through her head right now.
No, neither can I.
Mendez shook his head.
So what's the CIA doing for us?
They've set us up with secure connections. They've put us up in their safe houses, and Agent Axel almost lost his life after a meeting with Kendrick. We almost made it to the finish line, though, until we got the call from one of Jen's people.
You sure it's not someone straight from MSS?
Could be, but I don't know how deep that line goes, Will replied.
Do you have what they want?
We do. What assurances they'll ask for so that we don't renege on the deal, I don't know.
I doubt you'll get the opportunity to find out if the information does get out, which makes us all the more critical. We can't fuck it up.
Tell me, what's the plan?
Chapter 26 Mendez reached the offices of the FBI director. He waited on the small leather sofa outside of his office while his assistant announced his arrival. A minor tremor in his leg began acting up as he sat, which was usually a sign of his impatience, but this time it was his nerves. There was very little time to coordinate the plan and to squander it, anticipating the director hadn't been favored in. Several more valuable minutes passed when the door eventually opened.
SSA Mendez, I apologize for the wait. Please, come in.
The director smiled, clearly unaware of the news that awaited him.
Thank you, sir.
Mendez stepped inside and sat down.
I'm sorry for the short notice, and I appreciate your clearing your schedule.
You said this was an urgent matter.
Director Mobley returned to his desk.
It is, sir.
He retrieved a small MP3 player and placed it on the director's desk.
I'd like to play something for you.
As the audio began to play, the voice of Undersecretary Kendrick commenced.
You're telling me that they're still out there, that you and your team failed to shut them down. Do you have any idea what's at stake here?
Another voice began. We will stop them, and the threat will be quashed.
I believe you indicated that the last time, Kendra continued. I even gave you the agent, and yet you didn't take care of him.
At this, the director shot a glance to Mendez, then returned his attention to the audio.
They know what I've done, and if they get word to the FBI, I'm through, which means you're through.
The audio ended. You mind telling me what the hell that was all about? Director Mobley asked.
I'm afraid there isn't time enough to give you all the specifics, but what you need to know is that voice was the Undersecretary of the Office of Political Affairs, Drew Kendrick, and the other was a man by the name of Lei Jian.
The director seemed to immediately recognize the name. Former Ambassador Jin, who has known ties to the MSS.
Yes, sir. We have reason to believe that the mall attack was not orchestrated, nor was it carried out by the Army of Islam, as they had claimed. We believe the former ambassador was coordinating a colossal ruse to make it appear as though the Islamic terrorist group was responsible. We believe he was doing this to further the growth of the China-based Dalian Company, their largest investor in the U.S., and had the help of a State Department employee. They even went so far, we believe, as to offer the Army of Islam a stockpile of money to claim responsibility. Let me just stop you there. You keep referring to we. Who's in this with you? The reference to an agent in the audio was Trevor Axel. He was assisting the task force in the investigation. His partner, Agent Keith Colburn, only recently got involved. My partner, Agent Wilkason, was involved from the beginning when a series of financial transactions that had taken place was brought to his attention. Who brought it to him? FBI data analyst Lacey Merrick. She lost her husband in the attack.
The director leaned back in his chair.
Why am I just now hearing about this?
Because, sir, the information was obtained through unsanctioned resources, and we only had this audio along with money transfers that didn't directly tie to Kendrick. We had been working on obtaining that information and had intended to bring it to you at that point. The problem now, sir, is that Lacey Merrick's children, who Axel had placed in a safe house, have been taken hostage by these same people who killed Tom Neville and Owen Ballard.
Jesus Christ! Mendez appeared sheepish.
As you may know, I was removed from the investigation less than a week ago, and I believe Kendrick had a hand in that. Agent Kaysen, Mrs. Merrick, and the man who was able to obtain the information on the money transfers have been trying to outrun Jen's men for the past few days. We're out of time now, sir, and we need your help.
The tears that spilled down Lacey's cheeks left a salty white trail that couldn't easily be wiped away. She stared through the rear passenger window as they drove to the place where children and Celeste were now being held captive. She hadn't believed it would come to this. She'd put her children's lives at risk and second-guessed her actions. Hindsight being what it is, leaving well enough alone was a far better option. But she'd wanted to clear Jay's name, wanted the truth to come to light. It wasn't right how he'd been dragged into this because Ballard was trying to cover his own ass. This thought alone angered her, because he was the real reason for all of this. His greed, his desire to one-up Jay. If Ballard was still alive, she'd be the one to put a bullet in his head. Aaron reached for her hand. Hey, you okay? His touch startled her and yanked her back from her growing rage.
No, I'm not okay.
She caught Will's glance through the rearview mirror, but he quickly looked away, seeming to be embarrassed for listening in on the conversation. It hardly mattered to her now. She had no time for sparing feelings or concern over what people thought of her. Will had been the only one to believe her, but even that held no water. She wanted Jackson and Olivia back, and that was all.
We'll get them back, Lacey, Aaron began. I know you're scared.
She stopped him dead. I'm not the one who's scared. My children are scared because I put them in danger. I put my need to solve this insane conspiracy above their safety. So I'm not afraid to fight to get them back. I'll die if I have to, but they will live.
We're almost there, Axel began. I think we should go over the plan again, just to be sure we're all on the same page. He turned his shoulder toward the back seat. Just before we arrive, Colburn and I will jump out and take the final block on foot, so they see there are only the three of you inside the car. You're the ones they want, so they'll be anxious to talk to you. Lacey, you'll have to hop into the front seat. I want them to see you with Kaysen. She nodded. We'll hang back. Then the two of us will approach on foot after you all are inside. What about Mendez and the director? Don't we need to wait until we know for sure the director's on board? Will asked. We won't have time to wait, and we'll have to trust that Mendez made him see the situation for what it is. It's a risk, I get that, but it's a risk we'll have to take.
So we get inside and give them what they want, Lacey continued.
But not before we make the exchange and get the kids and Celeste outside.
Will glanced again through the rear view.
And that's where we'll meet them, Colburn said.
They'll see you before we're ready, Aaron began.
I thought the whole point was for you two to wait until we were leaving.
We will wait, but there aren't any windows in the front of the house. It was designed that way on purpose. So, if you can get them outside, we'll take it from there and lead them to the car.
And once they're safely away, Will added, we can give them what they want.
And hopefully they'll let us go, Lacey said.
They won't let us go without guarantees.
Will's final words reverberated in Lacey's ears. That was the multi-million-dollar question. What would they ask for in exchange? They would have the flash drive containing Jen's files. But she knew that wouldn't be enough, and assumed a bargaining would take place. Drop the investigation and accept Kendrick's story to let the terrorist group take the blame, or take the information to the top, have Kendrick arrested and ties with China damaged. They would come back for her and her family if that happened, and that made Mendez as part of the plan even more important. Mendez waited impatiently while the director considered the strategy.
Sir, will you help? You realize there will be huge political ramifications as a result of this.
I do.
And we're in the middle of an election year.
I'm aware of that too, sir, and I'm willing to risk my job for the truth to come out. We can't continue to perpetrate this falsehood so that political and economic ties with China will remain unaffected.
Sir, they already push the boundaries of our trade agreements. They control much of our debt, our companies. This goes through, and we'll end up risking more than our own political aspirations. We'll be risking the very freedoms inherent in our country.
Mendez knew he was laying it on thick, but what choice was there? He was asking the director to risk everything, and he had to appeal to his sense of patriotism. Allowing such an egregious act to go ignored could not be tolerated.
Then we'd better get started.
The director picked up his phone and made the call.
Have Agent Porter at headquarters bring me his files on the Fairfax Mall attack, and I'll need a team assigned to me immediately.
He paused.
This is for top security clearance only. There's no time to wait. Get them here ASAP.
He ended the call.
It's done.
Mendez checked the time and knew he only had 30 minutes before Kaysen and the CIA agents would arrive at the house.
Sir, you mind if I step out and make a call to Agent Kaysen to let him know we're on board? Go ahead. Porter will be here soon, so be quick.
Mendez stepped into the waiting area adjacent to the director's office. A small balcony was visible behind the assistant's desk.
You mind if I step outside?
Not at all. She motioned him toward the doors. Mendez stood on the balcony, peering over the streets below, and made the call. The line rang and eventually went to voicemail.
Damn it.
He'd waited too long, and that meant they were probably at the house or near it. He walked back inside.
Thanks. I'm going to head back in to see the director, if that's okay.
He's waiting. Go right ahead.
Within minutes of his return, Agent Porter stood outside the doorway. His assistant announced his arrival.
Porter, thanks for hustling down here.
The director began. I hear you have some information regarding a member of the State Department.
Porter's eyes shifted to Mendez because he knew the information hadn't been obtained through legal channels.
It's okay. Mendez filled me in. We'll worry about the legalities later. Just tell me what you've got, son.
Porter opened his laptop and showed him the audio transcripts of the conversations. These go all the way up through to about 12 hours ago, when Lacey Merrick received the last audio file.
Good. Thank you.
The director began to review the files when his intercom buzzed. Director Mobley, your team is here.
Send them in. Thank you.
Three agents entered the room, not in tactical gear, but in street clothes.
Thank you for assembling so quickly. As you know, time is of the essence here. Lives are at stake.
Of course. We're honored to serve, sir. I'm afraid we weren't briefed on the situation.
That was at my request, and in a minute, you'll understand why.
The car rolled to a halt alongside the curb.
This is your stop.
Will threw the gear shift into park.
It's time.
Axel nodded to Agent Colburn and tossed a glance at Lacey and Aaron.
You two know what to do.
Yes, Lacey replied.
Good. Stick to the plan and we'll get your kids back safely.
The two began to step out of the car and onto the sidewalk. The sun shone down through a cloudless sky, and the heat had begun to rise. It was 10 a.m., yet it felt as though it was 2 in the afternoon. Lacey stepped out of her side and walked round to the front passenger seat, noting that the agents were already on their way to the safe house. She slid inside and closed the door.
Let's go.
Will put the gear shift into drive and pulled away from the curb. No one spoke for that final block toward the house. Each had a job to do, and there was no going back. The house appeared in the distance, shrouded in greenery with faux windows installed at the front.
You sure they can't see through those? Aaron asked.
They're fake, just to make the house blend into the community. Agents are usually posted outside, but Jen's men must have ambushed them.
Will pulled onto the driveway and stopped when he reached the top.
I'm sure they're listening for our arrival, or have men of their own somewhere out here. But right now, they're expecting the three of us, and that's what they're getting.
A final toss of the gear shift into park, and Will cut the engine. He regarded Lacey with compassionate eyes that mirrored her own resolve.
You ready to get your kids back?
I sure as hell am.
She opened the passenger door without waiting for any instructions. She knew what she had to do, but wished she had a weapon. Will had a gun holstered at his side, and she was sure they would confiscate it before allowing them entry. But all her mind could focus on was the kids and holding them in her arms again. Aaron stepped out, and finally Will was outside. The three nodded their readiness and proceeded to make their way to the front door. Will insisted on being first, and he knocked. Lacey's heart pounded so hard, she began to feel lightheaded, as though there simply wasn't enough oxygen to pump to her brain, because the rest of her body required it to keep her on her feet. She looked to her friend, searching for reassurance, and she could see he was trying to offer it. But this was a situation neither had ever faced, and it scared the hell out of both of them. The door opened, and a man stood, tall and slender, wearing an expensive suit. Lacey thought he looked like he belonged on Wall Street, nothing like she expected, nothing like the men who had stormed the cabin. They looked like thugs, Jen's henchmen. But it was clear their situation had escalated and brought out the top-ranking men on Jen's team.
Agent Kaysen, glad you all made it, and with some time to spare. Well done. If you'll so kindly surrender your sidearm.
With one hand up, Will disengaged the latch on the holster and withdrew his weapon, handing it to the man with the butt of the gun facing him.
Excellent. Please, come inside. He glanced at Lacey. I'm sure you'd like to see your children.
Anger simmered inside her again. She couldn't stand for him to even mention the children. Who knew what they'd done? How'd they treated Jackson and Olivia? The three walked inside the cool, dark, and unadorned house inside the innocuous neighborhood.
Where are they? Lacey skinned the living room. We'll bring them out in a moment. But first, I believe you have something that doesn't belong to you.
The time was now, and Lacey retrieved the flash drive that contained the information on Jen's servers.
Is this what you're looking for?
She held it between her thumb and index finger. When he began to reach for it, Lacey retreated.
Not until I get my children. That was the agreement.
The man looked at Aaron.
You must be the one who was able to bypass the security measures to gain access. You're an intelligent man, so tell me, why would you do such a thing?
My friend needed my help, Aaron replied.
The man raised his weapon and pointed it at Aaron's head.
I see.
Hey. Anything happens to any of us and this deal goes away, you understand?
Will shifted in front of Aaron.
I could kill you all right now, and we wouldn't need any deal.
You think we didn't make provisions for that? This isn't my first rodeo,
Will replied.
The man finally lowered his weapon. Of course no one will get hurt. He looked to another man who stood nearby. Go get the children and their nanny.
The man returned his gaze to Lacey.
You must live a very comfortable life to afford a caregiver for your children. Although, no one can really replace the love of a good mother now, can they? Lacey had had enough but tried to keep her cool. It was in that moment when the other man brought the children into the living room. Her eyes immediately welled. Oh, my God! She raised her arms for them and watched them as their faces lit up. Mommy! Jackson tried to break free from the man's grip, but he wouldn't let him loose. The flash drive, Mrs. Merrick, the man continued. She raised her arm to shoulder level and began to walk toward the man to hand it to him. My kids, now. The man nodded to his colleague and the kids were freed. Both ran toward her and she dropped the drive into his hands, then quickly turned to pull her children close. I'm so sorry, babies. You're okay now. You're okay. She kissed their tear-stained cheeks. We're going home. While this is a lovely reunion, I must insist we finalize our deal. The man turned to Will. There are a few things we need to sort through before we part ways.
I'm listening.
Lacey stood up and peered at the man. Before we continue, you agreed to let the children and Celeste leave. We have a car waiting.
Of course.
Once again, he summoned his colleague.
Bring the woman out and escort them outside so that we may complete our business.
Celeste emerged from beyond the corridor. A tender but frightened smile appeared as she gazed at Lacey.
It's time to go home now, Lacey said.
The other men led the three of them toward the front door and walked outside, but turned before closing it behind them.
You want me to wait out here with them? My man will wait until they are safely away, and we won't have any problems, will we?
No,
Will answered.
Good.
He returned his attention to his partner.
Wait with them until their car arrives.
Once the man was outside, he continued.
As part of our agreement to resolve this peacefully, we expect the information to go no further than this room. And in the event you break that agreement, the consequences will be severe, and there will be no further dialogue. Your lives, as you know them, will be over. Do I make myself clear?
Crystal, Will replied. Chapter 27 A man stood next to a waiting car and signaled for Celeste and the children that it was safe to go with him. Uncertain and unwilling to risk the safety of Olivia and Jackson anymore, Celeste studied the man. He must have sensed her fear and a moment later moved toward them.
It's okay. I'm taking you all home now. I'm one of the good guys.
When he flashed a badge, relief swept over Celeste. Go on, kids. We're going to get in the car. Your mother won't be far behind. She placed her hands against their backs and gently nudged them to move forward. After being held captive for the past several hours, they were terrified and didn't know who to trust.
Come on, Jackson. We're going home.
Olivia reassured her brother.
Isn't Mommy coming, too?
Yeah, she'll be right behind us.
Agent Axel waited until the car with Colburn pulled away. The deal was done, and the family was safe. Now it was time to get down to business. Once Jen's man was back inside, Axel emerged from beyond the house. But the time had not yet arrived. Agent Casey and Lacey Merrick were still inside, still negotiating the settlement, ensuring the information would never make it out to the public. Several moments passed, and Axel grew concerned they had not yet appeared. But perhaps Kaysen was buying time to allow Mendez to do what he needed to do. Precise coordination efforts were falling into place, and the timing was critical. Director Mobley pushed up from his chair and leaned over his desk, studying the evidence against Kendrick and Lei Jin, whose ties to the MSS were now all too apparent.
We have enough to bring him in.
You know, the issue of how this information was obtained will define the success of his prosecution. One of the director's hand-chosen team members seemed to be playing devil's advocate.
I agree, Mendez began. But what you're forgetting here is the optics. A high-ranking official in the State Department colluding on a terrorist attack, then diverting attention to an Islamic terrorist group? The American people aren't going to give two shits about how we got the evidence. The point is, the man is a traitor to his country, and hundreds of people's lives were lost as a result. Mendez is right. The resulting evidence far outweighs our gathering techniques in this situation, the director replied.
Sir, that is a very slippery slope, the agent continued.
Look, we don't have time to discuss political fallout or civil rights abuses. Right now, this very minute, lives are at stake. The lives of FBI agents and civilian workers and the lives of CIA agents assisting them, not to mention two children. We need to act, and we need to act now.
Mendez turned to the director.
Can we move forward with apprehending Undersecretary Kendrick?
Director Mobley studied the faces of the men and women who'd spent the past hour piecing together information that clearly pointed to Kendrick's involvement. It would be a defining moment in his career.
We move in, and we do it now.
The team marched into the Office of Political Affairs and approached the lobby desk. The woman behind the desk stood up, her eyes widening at what she seemed to comprehend as an FBI raid.
Can I help you?
We're going to see Undersecretary Kendrick, the director began. Do not call him. Do not alert him in any way, or we will arrest you for obstructing a federal investigation. Do I make myself clear?
She nodded and sat back down while they swept past her toward the elevators. The doors parted, and the agents, along with the director, wearing their FBI windbreakers, made their way to Kendrick's office, ignoring the stares and stunned expressions of staffers they passed in the corridors. As they reached the assistant, her mouth dropped.
I'll need to call you back.
She placed the phone back in its cradle and gave them her full attention.
Can I help you?
Is Undersecretary Kendrick inside? The director asked.
Yes, sir. I'll let him know he has visitors.
Don't.
The director made his way to the door and pushed it open to see Kendrick on the phone.
Undersecretary Drew Kendrick, you're under arrest for violating U.S. Code 18, Part 1, Chapter 115, Misprison of Treason.
He retrieved his handcuffs as he approached.
What the hell is this? Do you have any idea what you're doing? This is a mistake, Kendrick said.
I don't think so, Mr. Undersecretary. I wasn't the one who helped the Chinese government conceal the fact that they were the ones who executed the mall attack, killing several hundred American citizens.
You have no fucking clue what you're talking about.
Kendrick was spun by his shoulders and his arms pulled back behind him.
You'll have to come with us, sir.
Mendez walked to the other side and helped pull Kendrick from behind his desk.
I hope you never again see the light of day.
The agents continued to lead Kendrick toward the exit, though he struggled defiantly. They reached his assistant's desk, and she peered at him with disgust.
This is a mistake. His eyes pleaded with hers. It's just a misunderstanding.
Will waited for the man's reply.
We're in agreement, then, he repeated.
The man nodded and walked toward the front door, pulling it open.
It will be nice to get back home. I'm glad we've put this issue to bed.
Will waited for Lacey and Aaron to walk outside before following. Lacey looked for Axel but didn't see him. They stepped down from the porch and began walking toward the car. The man's phone rang and he retrieved it while walking alongside his colleague as the others continued toward the car. He stopped dead and peered at his partner. Axel appeared from behind the shrubs near the front of the home.
Drop your weapons! Drop your weapons!
He aimed his gun at the man's head.
Kaysen, get in the car. The three of you need to get the hell out of here.
Will pulled Lacey toward the vehicle.
Get in.
He ran around to the driver's side, keeping his eye on Jen's men.
Aaron, get in the car.
Go now,
Axel repeated. Will keyed the ignition and slammed the gear shift into reverse. The tires spun on the concrete drive and black smoke wafted into the air. In seconds, they were on the street, and again he shifted the gears and sped away. The man lowered his gun and signaled for his colleague to do the same.
Smart move, Axel said. Your people tell you what happened?
He assumed the call had already reached him as they stepped outside. He had wanted to wait for Will and Lacey to be out of harm's way, but there was no time. Jen's men had to know, which meant Will and Lacey's lives would have been snuffed out in that very moment. Mendez had come through after all. The man shook his head and smiled at Axel.
You people have no idea what you've done. You think you're protecting your country, but you've just done more damage than you could possibly imagine.
Lacey looked over her shoulder at the house shrinking in the distance.
My God, what's going to happen to Agent Axel?
He'll be okay. Backup's already on its way.
Don't worry. Let's just get you to your kids,
Will replied.
It's over, Lacey. You and your family will be safe now.
She peered over her shoulder at Aaron, revealing a tender smile. She turned back and lowered her head, and the emotions of the past few days, really the past few weeks, finally caught up to her.
I just want to hold my kids and never let them go.
I know. We'll be there soon.
His phone vibrated in the console, and he raised it to his ear.
Agent Kaysen.
We got him. He's been placed under arrest. He turned to Lacey with a smile. Thank you, sir. Thank you for trusting me. I'm heading over to the Merrick residence now to drop off Mrs. Merrick and her friend. Her children and nanny are already there. You might want to be sure Axel's got what he needs to get out of there safely. Then I'll drive to headquarters and meet up with you.
Will ended the call.
That was SSA Mendez. They placed Kendrick under arrest.
Lacey didn't know what to say. Agent Kaysen had helped so much. He believed her when her own boss didn't. She wondered now if she would be allowed to return to work. Jay's name would be cleared, and the real culprits for this attack and the ensuing cover-up would be brought to justice. Things could get back to normal. Except it would be a new normal. One without her husband. Thank you for everything you've done for me, Will. If I tried to fight this on my own, I'd either be dead or in jail.
You did a lot of this on your own. You and Aaron both.
Everyone risked everything. And the only thing that will make their sacrifices worth something is for Kendrick, Jen, and everyone else involved to pay the price. Lacey spotted the gates to her community and was grateful she was almost home.
Will pulled alongside the entrance and punched in his guest code. The gate slowly swung open and he drove through, along the brick-paved streets of the exclusive neighborhood. I'm sure you'll be glad to sleep in your own bed tonight.
She turned to him and smiled. You too. I assume you'll be flying back home later today?
There's still a lot of work to be done here. We just arrested a member of the State Department for treason. The political fallout of media assault will be overwhelming, so I'll stay to help.
Will pulled onto her driveway and killed the engine.
You ready to go in?
Oh, yeah, I'm ready. Lacey stepped out of the car, and before she made it 2 feet, the kids ran out to meet her. She opened her arms and laughed a great boisterous laugh, like she hadn't done in years. Jackson almost knocked her over, but Lacey regained her balance.
Don't leave us again, Mommy. Promise you won't leave us again.
I promise, baby. I promise. She kissed his cheek and ruffled his hair.
Olivia held on to her mother with a vice-like grip.
I was so scared, Mom, she cried. Oh, honey, I know you were, and I'm so very sorry. But it's over now. You're safe. We're all safe now, okay?
Aaron walked toward her, and she offered her hand. He smiled and gladly accepted it.
Will looked on while this family, what was left of it, reunited. He wasn't married, nor did he have kids, but he imagined what it must be like and thought,
maybe someday. Come on now, let's get inside, okay? I don't know about you, but I'm starving.
Lacey led them toward the open door where Celeste stood. Her kind face revealed no anger toward Lacey, which he had expected after all she'd been put through.
Celeste placed her hand on Lacey's cheek.
I'm glad we're all home again.
Kendrick waited in a room flanked by FBI agents assigned to guard him. Director Mobley began to approach the door, but was stopped short by a man whom he recognized immediately as the Deputy Secretary of State.
Director Mobley, may I speak with you for a moment?
Yes, of course.
He followed him to a small, unoccupied office. The Deputy Secretary closed the door.
This arrest has raised a great deal of concerns for the Secretary.
I'm sure it has.
Well, what you may not be so sure of are the consequences this will have on the U.S. economy and ties with China.
The director continued to listen.
Our office has been on the phone with China's ambassador and the U.S. ambassador to China, and there are already great tensions over this situation. They have placed Lei Jun under arrest, so, as you can see, the actions of a few people have been handled.
Sir, this is much more than a situation, and frankly, I'm surprised you would believe otherwise.
What I believe doesn't matter. However, when word gets out about this, the blowback will be swift and costly.
What is it you're getting at, sir?
The director already had an inkling, and a deepening pain in his stomach was growing as a result.
This situation needs to be handled in an extremely delicate manner.
Are you asking me to let the undersecretary go? Sir, he committed treason against this country and conspired to kill hundreds of Americans.
Now, that's not entirely accurate. I'm not saying he's guilty of a cover-up, but he didn't help plan the attack. I'm saying that the department can't afford something of this nature to reach the American public. It will undermine all we've worked for with Chinese relations.
They blew up a fucking mall. What relations are you talking about?
The director's face burned red with anger.
There should be an immediate trade embargo put in place. Their ambassador should be returned home and all political ties severed, Mr. Deputy Secretary. And that's just for a start. He inhaled a deep breath and closed his eyes.
But you aren't going to tell the public, are you? You're going to let them believe the attack was executed by another extremist group.
Sir, they need to know that we have another enemy out there. One that is snaking its way inside our country, buying up corporations, buying up our debt. Our people have a right to know.
Just calm down for a moment and consider the ramifications here. What happened was an agreement between two people, not two countries. This may have been planned by certain members of the Chinese government, but it isn't an indictment of the entire government. This is what I mean by taking a look at the entire picture, not the plotting of individuals.
Oh my God. He placed his hands on his hips. I can't fucking believe this. You're going to bury it. Jesus H. Christ. You're going to bury the whole goddamn thing?
No. That's not what's happening. Kendrick will pay a price for his actions. I can assure you of that.
Then what? What are you going to do to him?
He's going to resign. And Lei Zhen and the people he's working with will be dealt with by their government. The president already made the call.
The president has already made the call,
the director said.
Of course he has.
He studied the man standing only feet in front of him and considered knocking him out cold. But this went up to the top, and there would be nothing the director could do about it but bend over and take it. The president will be making a statement within the hour and will announce the undersecretary's resignation, the deputy said.
Is he going to say why?
Just that he wants to spend more time with his family. The director nodded his head.
Right. Well then, I guess you don't need me anymore.
The director stormed out of the room. The three returned to the living room after a hearty lunch. The kids were upstairs, and it almost felt as though none of this nightmare had ever happened. Lacey would have the time to properly mourn Jay and try to move on with her life. I'm glad you two stayed for lunch. Thank you.
I'm going to have to be getting back. Mendez is going to be buried in it soon.
He glanced at his phone.
Oh, hang on. I've got a voicemail from him.
We'll listen to the message. Lacey noticed his smile fade, replaced by what appeared to be anger. Her heart sank as she glanced at Aaron. What could be happening now?
I don't know, he replied.
Will ended the call and stared at Lacey. Will, say something. You're scaring me.
I'm so sorry, Lacey.
He cast his gaze downward.
The president is making a statement soon. Turn on the TV.
She did as he asked and stared blankly at the screen until the breaking news report flashed in front of her. The president stood at the podium.
It has been a heartbreaking and challenging few weeks for all of us, but particularly the citizens of Fairfax. They have remained strong and have come together to help one another in this time of tragedy. We now have at least some resolution that will hopefully allow these people to begin to recover from this horrific attack. A group has claimed responsibility for that attack, and I can assure the American people that we are doing everything in our power to bring this group, who is affiliated with ISIS, to justice. As a result of this attack, the Undersecretary of Political Affairs, Drew Kendrick, has decided to resign. This has affected his family deeply, and he has chosen to spend more time with them as a result. No one can blame him for that decision, but he will be missed.
Her mouth dropped and she turned to Will. No, no, this can't be happening. They're covering it up. Why? I don't understand. Why would they do this?
Her voice raised an octave and the words fled from her lips with speed.
What about Jay? What about all the others who died?
Lacey. Will reached out for her. Mendez said they think it'll cause too much damage to the economy and to the relations we have with China.
They killed our people.
Aaron shook his head as he stared at the television screen.
This is unbelievable. Can't we go out there and tell the truth? Expose them for this lie.
You can't fight this. Not this time. Lacey, this has gone all the way to the top. Anything you do will be undermined. They'll destroy you if you fight this. And they'll make sure to destroy Jay's reputation in the process.
Will held her hand.
I didn't think it would end this way. I really didn't.
What am I supposed to do? My husband lost his life, and I just sit back and do nothing? What the hell did he die for, Will?
The best thing for you to do is to go back to work. Keep doing the good job that you were doing and help us track down the enemy.
That's what I was trying to do. I thought I knew who our enemies were, but I was wrong. Lacey rested her head on his shoulder, and she breathed in and out, trying to calm herself.
Erin watched as her spirit seemed to perish. She'd lost her husband, and now her country. And the man who'd helped her, a man who he thought could step right into Jay's shoes, held on to her. A moment later, Lacey steadied herself, pulled upright again, with shoulders back. "I'll go back to work. I'll do my job. But this doesn't end here. I don't care how long it takes me. The truth will be known."
"Lacey," Will began.
Erin smiled as he saw one last spark in her eyes. "I'll stand by you, Lacey. You have my word. We'll do whatever it takes to bring justice for Jay." "This isn't just for Jay. It's for all the victims who deserve better." She reached for his hand and squeezed hard before returning her attention to Will. "Work with me, Will. Help me bring them down, all of them." Will studied the two people whom he'd grown very fond of over these past few weeks. Their tenacity brought him strength.
"I think you're both out of your minds."
Lacey held his gaze. "So that's a yes." Will looked again at the television. The reporter shouting questions, but being met with no answers. He soon eyed Lacey and now mirrored her resolve.
"Yes."
The end. This has been State of Denial, a Lacey Merrick thriller, Volume 1, written by Robin Molly, performed by Caroline McLaughlin. Copyright 2016 by Robin Molly. Production copyright by Robin Molly.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.